Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Better Than Human, the podcast. This week, we're doing something a little different. Amber needs to take a couple weeks off for work, so we are going to be posting some of our favorite episodes. Yay! This week, we're doing one of Jennifer's favorite episodes, and we are doing the Villisca House. And if you know anything about true crime history, you are very familiar with this house. This is where the Villisca axe murders happened. So please enjoy this episode if you've never listened to it before. And if not, please enjoy listening to it again. And remember, if you like this episode or if you like your podcast, give us a good 5-star review wherever you listen to this podcast. And please like and follow us. Thank you. Bye.
Welcome back to Better Than Human, the podcast where we know humanity in general sucks. And usually we pick a topic and we talk about how that thing is better than human. Like the last 2 weeks, we did Neanderthals. I'm your host, Amber, and this is my co-host and sister,
Jennifer.
And this week, I hate Jennifer because she's making me spend the night in a house where people were brutally murdered and is probably haunted.
Yes, we're in the Villisca axe murder house, people. We are literally sitting in the living room recording in the house.
If you hear background noise, it's air conditioning. There's nothing we can do about it. Sorry.
Or it's ghost.
Don't say that. I'm already creeped out enough. I hate that we're here. I don't want to be here. And for this episode, I know nothing about this house. I don't know what happened in here. I don't know who lived here, except for their names now, because we just went to their graves.
We did. We went to the graveyard and visited the victims' graves.
So I know absolutely nothing. And I'm about to find out for the first time what went down inside the very house I am now unwillingly sitting in.
First, I want to talk about, is it bad taste to visit murder houses?
Well, I've got two theories, one for both sides.
Me too. Let's hear yours.
My first theory for the bad side is if there are ghosts here and they were killed here, I would not want to be like a spectacle, you know what I mean, for paranormal visitors to come gawk at.
Well, also, if it was your family member that had died there, you might not think it's in the best taste.
Yes. And if I was that ghost, I would be like to those people, you know, I was brutally murdered here. It's not like a fairground or a amusement park.
Okay, so what is your for it?
My for it is if they are still here. So if they're not here, then it doesn't matter if we're visiting because there's nothing here, so it doesn't matter. But if they are still here, maybe they enjoy company.
Also, it's a way to remember the dead.
That is true. I was just thinking that because they were killed 110 years ago. But with all the TV shows and the podcasts and all the other stuff done on it, everybody knows their name in a certain circle.
And I think certain areas should be preserved, like museums. So this house is a kind of museum.
But we don't preserve every spot where every person was ever murdered. There'd be a lot of preserved spots.
Well, that is correct. However, this house is like a time capsule for you to learn about that
murder.
Well, life during that time period too.
Okay, but you could do that in a house where people weren't killed.
Yeah, but are houses like that normally preserved?
That's true, no.
Sorry if my voice sounds weirder than normal. I was up vomiting all night.
Then we had to drive 9 hours to get here.
And we had to leave at very early for us.
We left at the time we usually go to bed.
Not for me.
I'm not gonna sleep a wink tonight either.
You can sleep on the drive tomorrow. Belisca. What do you think Belisca the word means?
It's the name of the town. So probably originally Native American word that white people stole.
You're very smart. That is correct.
What does it mean?
They thought it meant pretty place.
White people thought?
Yes. But after the murders, there's another word that's very similar or the same as Belisca in a Native American language. And do you know what it means?
Murder.
Evil spirit.
Ah. Do you know which tribe this is?
Unfortunately, I do not know what tribe it is, and it might be more than one, but it's the tribes that were in the area that we stole their land and probably killed a lot of them.
We might have even wiped out the entire tribe, for all I know.
So, the Belisca Axe murders occurred on the evening of June 9th, 1912.
Then why does all of the dates say they died June 10th?
Because it was the evening, so it was the overnight. And they think it took place between midnight and 4 a.m. So that would have been on the 10th. And in case you don't know, Belisca is in Iowa, in the United States of the Americas. There are 6 members of the Moore family on this night, and they had 2 house guests. All were found bludgeoned to death on the early morning of the 10th of June.
You're making me want to cry already, because there were children in this house.
All 8 victims, including the 6 children.
The 6 children?
There were 6 children.
There were 6 children.
There's 4 that were the Moore's children. And the 2 house guests, which were the Stillinger girls. They were like having a slumber party.
Oh.
They had all died from severe head wounds from an axe.
That's so sad. Who would do that to children?
I know. A lengthy investigation yielded several suspects, one of who was tried twice. The first trial ended in a hung jury, and the second ended in an acquittal. With today's technology, they think they would have quickly solved the murders. However, at this time, the crime remains unsolved.
They never solved these murders?
No, they did not.
These poor souls, all 8 of them were killed, and they never found who did it.
Or why they did it.
Wow, you're just making me more and more depressed.
Sorry.
I was at least hoping the killer was caught and tried.
No.
But no.
The Moore family consisted of the parents, Josiah, age 43, and his wife, Sarah. They don't put her age because she's a woman, so not important.
According to the Grays we just saw, she was 10 years younger than him.
So she would have been 33.
I'm 33.
Oh, yeah. You don't have 4 children, though.
No, thank God.
The oldest of which was 11. Their oldest was their son, Herman, age 11. Then Mary, their only daughter, was 10. Then Arthur, age 7. And Paul, age 5.
Isn't there a baby too?
No. You're singing that because of crib upstairs.
There's a crib, and also it said infant son on one of the graves.
No, you were looking at the Stillingers.
Oh.
So they were in a family plot.
Oh, so they had like a son that died maybe before he was even born or something. Or
and he was buried next to his sisters.
Oh, okay. Well, that's sad. They had their two daughters murdered at someone else's house.
Yes. The Moores were a well-known family, and they were well-liked in their community. On June 9th, 1912, Mary Moore invited Ina, age 8, and Lena, age 12, to spend the night at the residence.
And those are the Stillingers.
Yes. That evening, the Moore family had been attending the Presbyterian Church, where they participated in the Children's Day program, which Sarah had helped coordinate.
What's a Children's Day program?
We kind of had them at our church growing up. It's like all day kid stuff. So like singing, doing stupid plays.
So like summer Bible school?
The kids were doing plays and singing and performing for their parents.
Oh, okay.
But it was like a fun day. You know, like carnival day or something for the kids. When the program ended at 9:30 p.m.
That's awful late for children to be out.
Well, it was their special day and it was the summer and they didn't have school the next day. When the program ended, the Moores and the Stillingen girls walked to the Moores house. Sadly, the Moores, the father, was like, if the Stillingen girls are going to spend the night, we need permission from their parents. So he called the house. The parents were outside, but the older sister answered. And she said it was fine if they spend the night.
They had telephones in 1912?
They did. Which was an interesting thing. So Villisca, it had a train station, and the railroad went through it. To attract visitors, it said that they had more modern stuff, so they actually had electricity. They had street lamps. And they had phones.
Wait, how does a phone work without electricity? Because there's no electricity in the house.
You can have a phone without electricity.
No.
The phone I have at my house, if I had a landline, it would work without electricity.
Oh, okay.
That's how phones used to work, Amber.
I'm too young for that.
The program ended at 9:30, and the Moores and the Stillingers walked to the Moores house. The streets were pitch black at this night, though, because the street lamps were not on because there was a dispute with the power company and the town. So they had turned off their electricity. It'd be like us walking home and the streetlights being out, pitch black.
No, thank you.
The Moores arrived at their house around 9:45 and 10 p.m. There was a night watchman in the town who would have been like the night cop.
What's he going to do if there's no light?
Well, he thought he saw a man walking down the street, and he called out to him, and the man didn't respond. But he got distracted and never figured out who that man was.
Should have done your job.
Well, there's just one of you in the whole town. I don't think he did a shitty job. The Moores and Stillingen girls got back to the house. They had milk and cookies and then went to bed for the night.
Why is the floor vibrating? Are you doing that?
Yeah, sorry. Fast forward to the next day. At 7 a.m., their neighbor, Mary, was weirded out because no one was out in the house. And remember, the farmhouse, 7 a.m., you got chores to do. Kids get up early and they play outside. She came over and she knocked at the door. No one answered. She tried again, and she discovered that the door was locked. She had a key, but she felt weird going into her neighbor's house when it was all locked up.
Wait, which door was locked?
All of the doors were locked.
Did she try all of them? Do we know this?
She did not. She tried the back door. She let the chickens out. They had chickens. The chickens wanted to come out to eat breakfast.
I figured they had chickens if she let the chickens out.
She called Josiah's brother, Rossmore. When he came over, he knocked on the door again and he got no response. He let himself in with a spare key that he had. Because apparently they had a lot of spare keys for their house out there. He walked into the house through the parlor, which is behind you, the kitchen. And he opened the guest door bedroom, which is to my left. And he found Ina and Lena Stillinger's bodies on the bed. He immediately left the house and told Peckman, which is Mary, the neighbor, to call Hank Horton, Liska's primary peace officer. So they're one cop. He arrived immediately. Now, remember, she called them. You know how phones worked back then?
How?
They had a switchboard.
Okay.
So you had a call and you'd talk to someone and she'd connect you with who you needed to connect with. Also, phones back then, all the neighbors shared a line. So if you were using the phone and your neighbors picked it up to use it, they would hear what you were saying and you had to wait for them to be done.
That's a good way to spy on your neighbors.
Also, the switchboard operators heard everything you said. They immediately started spreading the word throughout the town.
Oh, no.
Horton searched the house and found the entire Moore family and the two Stillinger girls. They had been bludgeoned to death. Their murder weapon was an axe, which belonged to Josiah. So that's why it's an axe murder house.
Yeah, I get that.
The axe had belonged to Josiah, and I think they picked it up from the backyard.
Did they steal anything?
No, and they found the axe in the room with the Stillinger girls. Doctors arrived and concluded that the murders occurred between midnight and 5 a.m. Two spent cigarettes were found in the attic, which suggests that the killer or killers waited in the attic until the Moore family and the Stillinger girls were asleep.
That's why the attic felt so creepy.
There's also another theory that they had a barn. And the barn had like holes in it. So he could have been watching them from the barn to the house died down. Also, they found a human imprint in the hay where he could have been lying. But you've been up those stairs, right?
Yeah.
They're creaky. And the stairs lead right into where the parents were sleeping.
Yes.
So how did the axe murderer get up the stairs without alerting the parents?
Unless he was already in the attic.
Yeah. And the two cigarette butts they found were brand that Josiah didn't smoke. Because he did smoke too.
Everybody smoked back then.
They did. Here's what they think happened. The killer or killers began in the master bedroom where Josiah and Sarah Moore were asleep.
They took Josiah's axe from outside and then went to go wait with the axe in the attic.
Or they were in the barn and they grabbed it on their way in.
But we just established that they would have woken the parents up going up the stairs.
But think about it. You have two girls spending the night.
That's true.
Maybe the girls had woken up and were coming upstairs to ask a question or something. Josiah received more blows than any of the other victims. His face had been cut to such an extent that his eyes were missing.
Where'd they go?
They probably turned to mush.
That's disgusting. Some criminal psychologist would say that he was the main target then?
Yes. We watch a lot of cop shows. Also, he's the only one that the killer used the blade of the axe. For all the other ones, he used the blunt side.
Well, maybe he freaking broke it on Josiah's face. He couldn't use it.
No, he could. It was fine. They found the weapon.
Oh, that's horrifying. How could you just do that to someone?
Either before or after, he put sheets or blankets over their faces.
So he killed them and then he put a sheet over them? Or he put a sheet over them and then he killed them.
He could have put the sheet over them beforehand to stop blood spatter.
Oh, that would be premeditated murder then.
It was premeditated if he was waiting in the attic.
That's true. But he didn't bring his own weapon.
But also he could have covered it because he didn't want to look at their faces.
That's cowardly.
But it's common among serial killers.
To kill someone but not look at their face while you're doing it.
Yeah. Then, after he killed both parents, he went into the kids' room and murdered Herman, Mary, Arthur, and Paul. All were bludgeoned to death in their sleep. Then he went back to the parents' room and delivered more blows. And they know this or think this because one of Sarah's shoes was filled with blood and it was later tipped over. Then he went downstairs and killed Ina and Lena. Lena was the only person that they believe was awake during the murders because she had defensive wounds on her arm and she was not lying in bed like you would lie in bed. She was lying across the bed. Her nightgown was pulled up to her waist and she was wearing no undergarments, leading law enforcement to speculate that the killer sexually molested her or attempted to do so. At the base of her bed, there was a kerosene lamp, which had the top glass part removed, so only the bottom part. And if you do that, it doesn't reflect the shadows as much. It'd be like if you took a flashlight and you covered it and just poked one hole into it, so it's not as bright. And I think he used that to walk around the house. Also, gross, they found a slab of bacon next to her bed.
Why?
They believe he used the grease for it as lubrication as he masturbated.
Oh, to the Stillinger girls?
Yes.
So how did he know they would be here?
That's a good question. But he did know that there was going to at least be one underage girl here. But we'll get into why we think he targeted Lena.
Again, how did he know she was going to be here?
He didn't, but he knew Mary would be here at least.
Oh.
So, like, there would be an underage girl here either way. But maybe he preferred his gross.
Yes, I'm quite horrified. And we're literally sitting in the house where it happened, so I feel even more horrified.
He did not leave the house immediately after these murders and after the bacon incident. He covered all the mirrors with blankets. That's why all the mirrors in the house are covered.
But why?
Killers often do that so they don't have to look at themselves. And they'd be like, oh shit, what did I do? Also, you know how dark it is in here? All the windows are covered?
Mm-hmm.
He covered all the windows with sheets and blankets. And if he couldn't find those, he used garments to cover all the windows. So he kills everyone, covers the mirrors, covers the windows, does the bacon incident. Then they think he cooked some bacon on the stove and ate it. So he hung around at the murder scene for a while. He cleaned himself off, too. They found a bucket of bloody water where he had cleaned himself off. And he left no fingerprints, so he was wearing gloves. And as he left, he locked all the doors behind him.
So his fingerprints would have had to have been on the locks unless he was wearing gloves.
Yeah, he was wearing gloves.
Are we sure? Or is just police work not the best in 1912?
Well, there was only two police officers. They tried to preserve the crime scene. But remember, the switch operators have told everyone in town what has happened. So, like, 100 people showed up.
Yeah, that's people for you.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Being obsessed with haunted places and murder scenes is not a new phenomenon. Humans have been doing it for, like, forever.
It's like when someone gets pulled over, all the traffic goes slow because everyone has to stare either at the accident or who's been pulled over.
Yeah, so 100 people showed up and people are just walking through the house.
What?
Some people are taking souvenirs.
That's horrible.
And then the one, I think it was a dentist or doctor, showed up with his camera to take pictures of the crime scene. And they're like, ew, that's gross. Get out of here. I think only one picture remains. They called in a fingerprint expert because they realized quickly that they wouldn't be able to do this investigation.
It's not like in 1912 you can upload it to a computer and have it scan the database.
They couldn't find any fingerprints, but remember, a bunch of people just walked through the house.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
Based on the gouging and the sealing from the axe, determined that it was most likely the killer was left-handed. And he had used the axe in such a frenzy that it had left slash marks in the ceiling. He wouldn't have done that unless he was, like, free-handing it with one hand. They also called in bloodhounds. And the bloodhounds led them to a nearby river. And a large crowd of people were following these dogs.
So basically the neighbors kind of ruined the investigation.
Yes. There was a homeless camp in the area after these murders occurred. They're like, oh, fuck. And they took off.
Oh, the homeless camp?
Because
they knew they were going to get blamed even if they weren't involved.
Yes. And they were, I think, a lot of them were African American.
Oh, no.
So they're like, yeah, we need to get the fuck out of here.
No swearing in front of the children.
Oh. So, who done it?
You just said we don't know.
Well, there's some suspects. The first is Reverend George Kelly. You know how they were at that children's Sunday school special church thing?
Mm-hmm.
There was a Reverend George Kelly who was a traveling preacher. And to be a traveling preacher back then, you didn't need anything special. Just called yourself a traveling preacher.
Like that woman who just got in trouble in California for starting the wildfire because she was a self-proclaimed shaman who was burning, what was it, bear pee?
I don't know. So, Kelly, he was an English-born traveling minister, and he was in the town the night of the murders. He actually did one of the sermons that they listened to. Apparently, he was a very brim and fire type preacher. Yeah.
It's always those kind who end up being the pedophiles.
Also, apparently, he spit as he talked, so if you're close to him, you get, like, drenched.
Gross.
As an adult, he was accused of being a peeping Tom. He liked to look at women while they undressed, and several times he got beat up by angry husbands.
So he's a strong contender. But if he was at the all-day children's thing, how was he waiting for them in the attic?
Well, he could have come from the barn. There's nothing to say he was there at the end. We don't know that he stayed there to 9:30.
That's true.
But he was staying at a fellow minister's house. And the minister said he was there all night, but the minister was sleeping, so he doesn't know. The next day, the Reverend left at 5 a.m., super early. He left a few hours before the bodies were discovered. Then the following weeks, he displayed a fascination with the case and wrote many letters to the police, investigators, and family of the deceased.
They always say serial killers show back up at the crime.
So he aroused suspicion of a private investigator who we'll talk about, who's kind of a D-bag. And he asked for more information. Kelly replied in great detail and claimed to have heard sounds and possibly witnessed the murders. However, he was known to be mentally ill. He had been institutionalized in the past.
And he was their guest preacher.
Yep. In 1914, so 2 years after the axe murders in this house, he put out an ad asking for a typist or someone to, you know, write down what he's dictating.
Sort of like a secretary or a personal assistant.
Yeah. So a 16-year-old girl responded and he wrote back asking her if she'd be able to do it in the nude. So this girl was like, this is fucking weird. And she went to her preacher and her preacher took them to the police. The police did to catch Predator way before the days. They wrote back to him pretending to be her. And he sent back a very obscene letter.
Ugh.
He was arrested, but not imprisoned. He was sent to St. Elizabeth's Hospital, which was a mental institution. In 1917, he was arrested for the Villisca murders. Police obtained a confession, which I did in air quotes from him.
Did they beat it out of them, or did they just coerce
They were in
him?
A room with... They poised as fellow inmates in his cell and used advanced techniques. So they probably beat him up. During this confession, quote-unquote, he said he had heard a voice in his head telling him to slay utterly. Do you know where that's from?
No.
It's from the Bible, Ezekiel chapter 9, verse 16. It goes, slay utterly, old and young, both maids and little children and women. Isn't that a great, great Bible verse?
Yes.
But again, he was mentally ill, and this was a coerced confession. He had two separate trials. The first was a hung jury. The second time, he was acquitted. And after that, he kind of just disappears into obscurity.
This doesn't sound like a one-and-done murder, though. This sounds like this person murdered, then went somewhere else and did it again.
It does. We'll get into that theory. But let's talk about Frank Jones first. Frank was a local who lived in the town. He was actually a state senator. Josiah Moore used to work for him at a tractor company. But he went to Frank Jones and was like, hey, I'm your best salesperson. Can I get a raise and stop having to work ridiculous hours? And Frank Jones was like, no. So Moore set up his own business across the street. And he took the John Deere Company's contract from him. So he stole a lot of his business. And he did really well. They're like, Frank Jones must not like him because of this. It's also rumored that Moore was having a sexual affair with Jones' daughter-in-law. But there's no evidence of this.
Yeah, that's probably just.
Though, there is evidence that his daughter-in-law liked to entertain male guests when her husband was out. Doesn't mean she was stepping out. But it was very uncommon for that time.
Maybe she was just a bold young woman.
Exactly. They're like, oh, he had to do it, but he was old, so he couldn't have done it. So there's this private detective who I'll talk about in a little bit, and he said that William Mansfield, he hired, so...
That's the detective?
No, that's the name of the guy the detective says that Frank Jones hired.
Oh, to kill the family?
Yes. William Mansfield, also known as Blackie Mansfield, they say that Frank Jones hired him to murder the family. First off, I'd like to say that William Blackie was not black.
I didn't think he was.
But the people of Villisca assumed he was black. Because of this, they ran all the black residents out of the town, and this town became a sundown town.
What's that mean?
That means if you're black and you're found after the sun goes down, bad things are going to happen to you.
Ah.
It is believed that Blackie Mansfield was a serial killer because he did murder his wife, infant child, and parent-in-laws with an axe 2 years after the Villisca crimes. So he did kill people.
So he sounds like a repeat offender.
He is also believed to have killed a bunch of other people in the area. All these crimes happened in areas that were easily accessible by the train. However, he had an airtight alibi. He has a pay stub from an employer, like, out of state for that day. So there's no way he could have made it here to commit the murder.
Did they talk to the employer and verify that?
Yes, the employer swears that he was there. After the Morse family died, it was very common back then. So basically, police forces didn't have the manpower to solve crimes like this. And actually, from the book, The Man on the Train, I learned that if you wanted people to investigate your family's murders, you had to pay for it. So you would have to get like a reward fund. And that's what the Moore's family, their relatives, and the Stillingen girls' families did. And they hired the Burns Detective Agency. That's like private detectives. But if you wanted something solved, you had to get this private detective. But a lot of time, remember, they're making money off the reward money. So they'd try to increase the reward money as high as it would go. And then find someone and be like, he did it. And then they get the reward money. Yay. This detective, James Newton Wilkerson, suggested that Blackie Mansfield was a cocaine-addicted serial killer. He had no evidence. And he was convinced that the senator, Frank Jones, was responsible for the murders. This dude, he would, like, have rallies in the town to raise money for himself to try and convict this guy.
Yeah. The private detective?
Yeah, Wilkerson. He was, like, 100% convinced that he was right. Eventually, he got fired. Oh, also, he went undercover in the town for 2 years, being paid. He's a D-bag. So those guys didn't do it, I don't think. Maybe the Reverend didn't, but not the senator. Then Henry Lee Moore, not related to the Moore family. He was convicted of murdering his mother and grandmother with an axe several months after the Villisca murders.
Wouldn't he have killed them first, though, if he was a serial killer?
Not necessarily. Sometimes they have to practice for the ones they want to kill. But he had an alibi. And then there's Paul Mueller, the man from the train, the book I was talking about. Bill James and his daughter, Rachel McCarthy, believe that there was a serial killer working based off the railroad.
Oh, so the people you just named thought there was a serial killer.
Yes.
Okay.
They wrote a book called The Man on the Train. They believe that this guy would ride the train, get off at a stop in a more rural area like this village. He'd find a house and sit and wait for the family to go to sleep. The house, not necessarily, but normally would have a prepubescent girl. And then he would murder everyone in the house, cover all the windows, cover all the mirrors, take the tops off of all the kerosene lamps. And he'd spend hours in the house before he would leave the house and he would lock everything up before he left.
So why are these two people the only people who know about the serial killer, though?
We don't know who it is, though. We know that there was a serial killer.
But why are these two people the only people who know this person caused all these murders?
Because you can't prove it. It's their theory.
Oh.
And they think that this Villisca axe murder house was the last murder that this murderer did.
Why?
We don't know. He just stopped. He could have died. He could have gone to prison.
That seems the most plausible as of yet.
I agree. The most probable is that it was a random serial killer. And if it wasn't a random serial killer, that's why we've never been able to catch them. Because there's no real reason why. Like, no one else has a good enough reason. The Reverend Kelly, while he did have a good reason, he was kind of like a wuss, they said. And they don't think he was strong enough to wield the axe with such force.
And also the fact that he was sending letters to that girl, that doesn't seem like something you would do after you've already killed someone to get into there.
Unless he was going to murder her. I know. But she seems too old for him, too, if the target was young girls. But we don't know that Lena was a target. She could have just woken up. And during the struggle, her nightgown got pulled up.
Yeah, maybe she slept underwearless.
So that is a murder. Now let's talk about the house.
Because I'm not creeped out enough already. I'm sleeping in the car tonight. That's it.
November 7th. There was a group of people staying at the house like we are.
November 7th what?
Don't have the year.
1914? 2014?
2014. 2014 on November 7th.
I just made that number up off the top of my head.
No, I said it earlier. And that's why... Anyways, it was 2014. There was a group of people staying in the house. One of the individuals was rushed to the hospital with a self-inflicted stab wound to his chest. Robert Stephen Larson, age 37, was staying at the house, and they were with recreational paranormal investigators. He was apparently staying, I guess, in that room over there, and he was the only one in the area. And
are you trying to make me cry?
Yeah, he was in the northwest bedroom. And the rest of the party was outside. He called out for help on his two-way radio. His companions found him stabbed in the chest with an apparent self-inflicted wound.
Was he just doing it for attention?
They called 911 and he was airlifted to a medical center. The incident happened at 12:45 a.m., which is said to be the approximate time of the 1912 murders. He could have stabbed himself. We don't know. That's from Ghost Adventures. The one woman who used to live in the house and she was a girl said her father was sharpening a knife away from him and he accidentally stabbed himself as well.
That doesn't make any sense, though. That's not how anyone was murdered in this house. It's like when we went to that prison and they said there was a female ghost for the male prison.
Yeah. The first paranormal investigators didn't visit the house till 1999. Before that, it was a residential area. It had kind of fallen out of repair. But the house was bought and restored. And that's how it came on the National Registry of Historic Places. If you look right behind you, on the opposite side of the wall, there's a certificate there.
Yeah,
for
I saw that when we first walked in.
And the house originally was open for tours just as a historical site. But then they started allowing paranormal visitors in 1999.
Well, who was the first?
I don't know. I don't have it listed.
Who decided this house was haunted?
Well, these paranormal visitors when they first arrived here. However, And if you watch the Ghost Adventure episode, the two women that lived here previously said that they did sense something. But these paranormal investigators, they come here and they try to find out who the killer is. Or to communicate with the children. These paranormal investigators believe that the children and the killer are not in the house. They believe that the house is a beacon for spirits. They believe that there are spirits present in the house. Some of them believe that there are spirits present in the house. But none of them are the actual family members or the killer. If you watch the Ghost Adventure episode, there's paranormal people here, and the one guy got a scratch on his, I think it was back or stomach, and it was in the shape of an L. And you know how they do those recording things where they, like, record?
Mm-hmm.
He said that they heard the word legion in the recording.
Like Legionnaires' disease?
No, like legion, the demon. Oh. Demons. So in the Bible, Jesus casts a demon out of a person.
That just seems too...
And he asked the demon what his name is, and he said, "I am legion, for I am many." And he cast that demon into the pigs, and the pigs ran off the cliff. Do you remember that in the Bible?
No, I don't.
You never paid attention in Bible study?
No. I was too busy in my own head.
There was that. Oh, and then these people said that there was a trickster ghost or demon that hangs out here that tries to trick people into thinking there's a child staying here. But Ghost Encounters think that it's the Reverend Kelly that's haunting the place.
Why?
Because they think on one of their recordings, they hear something that says Reverend or Kelly that distinguishes that it's him. But for me, he didn't die here.
No.
He was never convicted, and he died like somewhere in upstate New York. So why would he be attached to this house?
Can we go now?
No. So, what do you think, Amber?
I think I want to go now.
Why?
I don't want to spend the night in a haunted house.
Is it haunted, though?
Everything you just said says yes.
No.
Except for no one can agree on what ghost it is. But that lady at the restaurant said that people saw the two girls often in this room right next to us.
No, she said that people had experiences often in that room.
And then she said the two girls. They saw the two girls.
Did they?
That's what she said.
Okay. Also, that closet upstairs. That's why I shut the door. Because mm-hmm. that door will open and close on its own. And people experience weird stuff in the attic.
I hate you so much right now.
That one book I read, the guy said, you should never sleep in a haunted house. Because when you sleep, you open your mind more to allow the demons in.
I hate you so much right now.
But we have to tell them not, they cannot attach to us. So ghosts or demons or anyone in this house, if you are here, you cannot attach yourself to me or my sister.
Yeah, no thank you.
We will not allow it.
It is not allowed.
We don't like you. Stay in this house. So.
I hate you so much right now. I want to start crying.
What? There's nothing creepy about this house besides it's a little dark right now.
You look like a demon with that lighting on your face.
Thank you.
What if I have to get up and pee in the middle of the night? Am I just supposed to go by myself?
Do you want to read some of the letters from on top of the...
No!
You don't think it would be good for the podcast?
You can read them into the mic on your own.
Okay. I don't know why Amber's freaking out. There's nothing creepy.
There were literally 8 people murdered in this house, and you're saying there's nothing creepy.
people are murdered everywhere all the time.
Those murders aren't always unsolved. These were unsolved. I mean, granted, it happened 110 years ago. Almost.
What would be keeping them here? If you believe in an afterlife, wouldn't you go to the afterlife?
I suppose. What if it's a bend in the space-time continuum?
So we're going to spend all night here.
No, we're leaving now.
We're going to let you guys know if anything creepy happens.
No, we're leaving now.
A follow-up in the morning or tomorrow when we get to our hotel. We can record more, too, if something happens.
Oh. No, we're leaving now.
Thank you guys for listening. Remember, it's October! It's Halloween month! It's spooky time! Get excited! Hi, ghosts. Don't attach to us. If you want, follow us on all the social medias. Follow us on Twitter at BetterThanHuma1. That's HUMA1. Follow us on TikTok at BetterThanHumanPodcast. Before this episode comes out, we are going to have posted some really cool videos of Amber being terrified. If you haven't seen them already, please watch them. You look really scared. Why are you so scared?
Because we're in a haunted house where people were murdered.
Follow us on Facebook at Better Than Human Podcast.
And you just told me there's demons in this house.
There are no demons in the house.
You don't know that.
Well, we will soon. Check out our website at betterthanhumanpodcast.com and send us an email at betterthanhumanpodcast@gmail.com. And remember, be better than human. Don't be a ghost. Don't be an asshole and murder an entire family with an axe for no reason and then do something weird with bacon. Bye. Hello.
Okay, we're both good.
Cats at your feet.
Yeah, Jennifer wants to record a follow-up, so.
How'd you sleep last night, Amber?
Horrible.
Did you sleep at all?
Some. I slept for like an hour and a half. I slept for like a half an hour. But I slept for like an hour and a half. And I'm laughing because the cat insisted on coming in the house.
No, please don't jump on my lap. You got claws.
And the cat is very insistent on being pet.
He wants to sit on my lap right now.
He already sat on my lap.
I think he wants treats, but I don't have anything a cat can eat.
So why did you want to do this follow-up?
Oh, did anything spooky happen to you in the house?
Just being in it felt spooky.
I went upstairs several times during the night. I mean, it's creepy up there, but that's because there's no light. Then I slept okay, considering I was sleeping on a cot.
I was sleeping on a very uncomfortable couch.
You were. Did you try to wake me up at all last night?
No.
Okay. Why? I had a dream that someone was trying to wake me up.
How do you know it was a dream?
Exactly. I've dreamed like that, though, sometimes. But I didn't have any other dreams that I remember.
So, how do you know it was a dream and you weren't awake?
I don't. But how do I not know it any other times?
That's true. The only demon in this house is a cat.
Oh, he's so cute, though.
He's very cute. Very friendly. Your cats never crawl on my lap and demand pets like that.
Like I said, I think it's a boy cat.
Okay.
And I think boy cats tend to be more friendly.
Oh.
Overall opinion of the Velisca house.
Don't come here ever.
I mean, come here.
Okay, don't spend the night here. It's creepy.
I think it's just creepy because it's an old house with no electricity.
It's creepy because 8 people were murdered here.
Well, that's Amber's opinion.
What's your opinion?
It's creepy because it's old. It's a cool place to stay, though.
It's in the middle of nowhere, Iowa.
Okay. Onwards on our trip, Amber.
So your conclusion is there's no ghosts here.
In my opinion, I didn't feel anything. Or notice anything.
I just felt very scared.
She was very scared all night.
So my bias may have impaired my judgment.
Your bias might have biased yourself.
Yes.
That's all. Thank you, guys.